Hey folks, it's Evan McCormick, your host of Music and Time on WGXC. It's been a minute, so let me remind you what this show is all about. I'm a historian, like for a job. So by day, I think about the past and the passage of time. And by night, or really any time, I'm thinking about music. And so this show is my attempt to bring those two worlds together. The idea is that I feature an album and explore the history around it. And sometimes the point is to try and make us think of a really important album in a new way. Other times it's to use an album to help us think about the past and our own time in new ways. And that's the kind of show I have for you today. It's got a bit of a fun backstory. You see, a few years ago, I was in a record store in Brooklyn. Shout out Record Grouch. I had just moved there after taking a job at Columbia University, and I was flipping through the new arrivals bin, and I came across a record that caught my eye because, well, it had my new employer's name on it. It was called Cuts, Current Music at Columbia University. I had never seen it before. I scanned the back cover, and I realized that what I was looking at was a compilation of student bands from Columbia College put out in the year 1984. And I'll be honest, I didn't know one single band on that list. But some notes from the store clerk identified it as a new wave record. And being a sucker for college rock, for compilations, and let's be honest, for obscure material, I thought, what the heck? I'm going to buy it. So I did. I took it home. I listened to it. And then it went on the shelf, along with a lot of other compilations. Now, fast forward about a year, my wife and I move upstate with our boxes and boxes of records. I saw it again then, I played it a few times, but still, it didn't register as anything more than a piece of student ephemera from the 1980s. And then, last year, things got pretty intense on campus at Columbia. You might have heard about it. And it was in that moment, weirdly, that I thought about this record. Not because of any political overtones that were obvious on the record, but because in that moment, when Columbia's campus seemed so divided, I remembered thinking to myself, just imagine an undergraduate music scene so rich, a wellspring of campus bands so deep, that it was possible to produce a compilation of new wave music from a particular university. I thought there had to be a story there. So I did what I do. I went digging in Discogs, in old newspapers, and of course, in the liner notes. In the liner notes, I found the name Tom Orrett. I looked Tom Orrett up online, where I found him on LinkedIn, and I sent him a message. Are you the Tom Orrett that went to Columbia? I asked, the one who put together a compilation album. I titled the message simply, Cuts 84. And then Tom wrote back. It was his record, and there was a story. Maybe not a world-moving story, but the kind of story I like to tell on this show. Since 1984, Tom said, I was the first person to come asking about it. So 40 years later, I asked Tom if he would help me tell that story for this radio show, and he said yes. So today, as college students around the country prepare to arrive on campus for another year, or perhaps their freshman year, we're going back in time to Morningside Heights in the academic year 1983-1984, with the help of an interview with Tom Orrett to understand a little bit more about the music scene from those years at Columbia University, as documented by Cuts. And since Columbia University is my employer, here is where I should probably say that the opinions expressed about this rockin' compilation are entirely my own, because this is Music and Time on WGXC.
Yeah. checklist too. One of them has got to tell me what to do. The human race is of two kinds, those who put it down and those who keep it inside. I'm a little bit one and a little bit the other. Half I got from dad and the rest I got from mother. I'm listless, put it down to the weather. I'm listless, feeling sorry for myself. Listless.
Welcome back to Music in Time on WGXC. I'm your host, Evan McCormick, and that was Listless by Token Entry from Cuts, a compilation of undergraduate music at Columbia University in 1984, which I'm highlighting on today's show. Now, before we dig into the story of the album and of Tom Oret, the student responsible for it, let's go back in time and ask, what was it like to arrive on campus at Columbia College in New York City in the fall of 1983? Well, let's see. It was the height of the Cold War. Reagan was in office. War Games had just come out that summer. Mayor of New York City was one Ed Koch. The Yankees, well, they were mediocre, finishing 7 games back from the Orioles, who went on to win the series. The Mets, well, they were well out of it by the time students arrived on campus. But if you were a student, you probably had other things on your mind other than baseball. Classes, perhaps. But things were getting pretty hot on campus that year, too. The year prior, the Columbia Board of Trustees had just okayed a tuition increase of about 13.5%. So unless you had financial aid, you were looking at a tuition room and board bill of about $12,000. Just FYI, Columbia education these days will set you back about $93,000. Campus protesters were calling on the university to divest from apartheid South Africa. Oh, and by the way, 1983-84 was the first year that Columbia became co-ed. That's right, the last of the Ivies to admit women, 1983-84. So those were some of the circumstances that might have met a student returning to campus. Student like rising senior and computer science major Tom Oret was kind enough to join me for the show today. Great. This is Evan McCormick, host of Music in Time on WGXC, and I'm here with Tom Oret. Tom, why don't you introduce yourself to our listeners?
Sure. Hi, everybody. And Evan, first, thanks for having me on the show. So I am in Philadelphia. I live in Philly, and I'm from the Philadelphia area. And
So when Tom arrived in New York City in the fall of 1983, he had the thing that so many rising seniors have on their minds, which was how to have fun on campus. And that year, Tom did what he had done for each of the 3 prior years, which was to stay involved in the campus music scene.
So I went to Columbia College undergrad. I graduated in 1984. And the 4 years I was there, I always played in bands. I play guitar. And, you know, we had a pretty good scene back in those days. There were a lot of local bands that would, you know, play frat parties and, you know, bars around the neighborhood each weekend. And it was a lot of fun. So I got the idea, junior year into senior year to that wouldn't it be really fun if we could make an album of campus bands? And I thought it would be a great memento for students to have later in life to, recall their college days. Plus, for the musicians, for the bands, it's a great opportunity to go into a studio and record a song. So I had been involved in student government while I was there, so I was familiar with like student activities. And there were, there's three schools. There's the college, engineering, and Barnard. So since I was part of that I guess apparatus, so I put together a proposal. I got all the costs together and figured out, what would this cost, and I pitched it to the three student councils, and they ponied up the money.
But this was not Tom Oritz's first foray into entertainment promotion as a student at Columbia.
That's how I was familiar with the student councils, because when I was a freshman, I joined one of the activities in an effort to just meet people and make friends and so on. And so I was involved. I joined this thing called Columbia Cabaret, and we'd have an event every month or two, and there was no consistency to it. So the guy who was running it was a senior. He graduated. So my sophomore year, I was scratching my head, what am I going to do with this thing? But what I had always loved to do was go to the comedy clubs and see stand-up comedians. So I got the idea to do that. So I'd go to the shows, and I'd just walk up to the comedians after the show and just say, "Hi, I'm Tom, and I'm a Colombian. We book comedians." And I was able to book comedians, and for all of those shows for like 2 3 years, never used an agent, which was nice. But some of those people, of course, went on to become very famous in later years. I could name drop if you want,
Please
but okay.
tell us.
So we booked Paul Reiser, we booked Joy Behar, we booked, at the time, he was pretty big, Mark Wiener. He had a show on Nickelodeon, like the Wiener, with his puppets, the Wienerettes. We had Bob Nelson, who also was pretty big at the time. Oh, and we had Bill Maher. He was one of my favorites back then. He was great.
Think I've heard of him.
Yes.
Jokes aside, music was Tom's first love. We'll get to the story of Cuts, current music at Columbia University, after these two songs off the compilation album. Here's Tom Oritz's own band, Boss Tweed, with the song Needless to Say, followed by Charlotte's Web with It's Not the Money Man.
Thank you. money man. It's my angel. It's not the money man. Give me back my angel. His erotic dream was that she danced naked on the fire escape. She held a blue book to express that in her navel there was a grave. Now the conflicts were in progress. Were flights down the sound of wagers filtered all the way up. He was impatient as he said this to her shadow cast upon the trade. He said, it's not the money man, it's my angel. It's not the money man.
Welcome back to Music in Time on WGXC. I'm your host, Evan McCormick, on this back-to-school episode. I spoke with Tom Orrett, who was 40 years ago a Columbia College student entering his senior year. Before the break, we heard about how Tom had gotten involved in student government by working on events and student life on campus. But during his senior year, he had the idea to put together a compilation album of bands from Columbia's campus to put it on vinyl. And that is the idea that eventually became Cuts, Current Music at Columbia University. And like many good ideas, it started with an important question. Who is going to pay for this? Well, the answer to that question was the student activities fee. Let me say more. The student activities fee was a $20 fee charged each semester to all Columbia students. It funded speeches, concerts, film screenings, and the like on campus. It had been voted into being in 1980, and like many things on a college campus, it had become the subject of some contention among Columbia undergrads. The fee was too high. Students didn't get their money's worth, the people who disliked it argued. They complained that bureaucratic interests within the student government were using students' money for things that the student body writ large wasn't really that interested in. Not so, said Tom Orrett. In 1982, while serving as vice president for programming on the student's board of managers, Tom had written a lengthy op-ed in the student newspaper, the Columbia Spectator, defending the student activities fee, which he pointed out gave Columbia about $67,000 to fund programming, which, he argued, vastly enriched life on campus. In 1982, under a recently created series, for example, Columbia Concerts, the fee had helped bring the Ramones to come play on Columbia's campus. Anyway, when Tom took the idea to the board of managers for his compilation album, he had one thing in mind. He had to make sure that students would see the benefit of it. Here's Tom.
So, but the thinking behind this project was it has to really be about, students. So I had a stipulation that, it had to be original music, and at least half the band had to be undergraduate students. And wherever else possible, I tried to get people involved who were students. So in the, say, the manufacturing or the artwork and some of those aspects of putting a record together. So the only people involved that weren't students, I had to get three judges. I decided we needed three judges because we ended up getting like 35 different tapes. 35 different groups wanted to participate. So that gives you an idea of how many bands were around at the time, right? And so I found these three judges, and it was all sort of blind. They didn't know anybody. And they went through the tapes, and they, of course, it was all tapes back then. And so they selected, we figured, I don't know how I came up with 11, but I figured, we had space for 11. So that's what we did. They picked, the 11 bands, the 11 songs. And in order to kind of get the money from the student councils, I also came up with the idea that if you were in a band and you were, going to participate, you had to, as part of there was a requirement, you had to buy five albums at $2.50 each, right? So we had some built-in sales from the get-go.
So maybe it was a little bit pay to play, but that $12.50 was far outweighed by the experience the bands would get by being part of the Cuts project.
So anyway, late into '83, we had figured out who the judges were. The bands would go, and part of the deal was if you were a band, you would get 5 free hours of studio time. And downtown, the studio was down on 30th Street. I believe their claim to fame at the time. Now remember, this is 1983. Their claim to fame back then was that that was where the original MTV spots were recorded. And if you went over the 5 hours, then that was on you. You had to pony up whatever else the costs were, but basically you got the first 5 hours free. But you also had to buy five albums per person. So that was the big deal, right?
The 11 bands that were selected by the judges did their recording at J&J Recording Studio, 242 West 30th Street. As Tom said, a Midtown studio where some of the early MTV spots had been filmed. They worked with a house engineer, a guy named Joseph Armillas, and Claude Akile. Tom had found the studio because they were connected to another studio and venue where his band, Boss Tweed, had performed, a place called Legal Tender. We heard Boss Tweed a little bit earlier. For many bands, it was their first taste of professional studio time. And one can imagine the allure of the possibility of recording something that would stand the test of time. And I have to intervene here to say that the results, 40 years later, when you consider that these are undergrads, sound pretty good. Take a listen to these two tracks, which open up the album's first side, titled West Side, an inside reference to Columbia's bifurcated campus. Here's Leap of Faith by Garden Room, followed by The Rave Ups with Pretty Face.
Yeah. too long ago that you and I were more than just close friends. And then words are spoken, bonds are broken and weak, both that to make amends. Now I know it's not my place to say who you want to take my place, but I never thought you'd be the one to fall. Some fall on zero.
Pretty face.
Someone unuser. He probably tells you he loves you, and you probably think it's the truth. He'll be another notch on his gun for your beauty and your youth. You say he's an animal for you to tame. If you think that you can change his ways, you'll only be his next big game.
A pretty face,
some muscle bound hero.
Pretty face,
some full blown zero.
Pretty face,
some woman user. Where's your sensibility? Can't you see your head in? Far, far. Where's your sense of decency? Tell me, where's your sense at all? It wasn't too long ago that you and I were more than just close friends. And then words are spoken, bonds are broken, and we both had to make amends.
A pretty face,
some
those were two more tracks off of Cuts, a compilation of Columbia University undergraduate bands put together in 1984 by a student, senior Tom Orrett, a record which I found years later at a record store in Brooklyn before eventually going down the rabbit hole to try and learn the story behind it. And that's the history I'm sharing with you today on Music and Time on WGXC with the help of Tom Orrett, who I spoke to for this episode. And I was floored by one detail that Tom shared with me earlier in the interview, that 35 bands had responded to the call with demo tapes. It seems so hard to imagine that you'd have a campus scene so vibrant, so centered on music, that you'd have this kind of massive response. But this was New York City in the 1980s, and it was a college campus to boot, a place where music and creativity had a social currency all its own.
I knew most of the people back then, or had played gigs with them, which was pretty common too, or maybe even played with them because, you know, every year, for example, our lineup would get tweaked or whatever. You know, if you think about it, you know, you're in New York City, right? Like, you're not in Podunk, so it may not have the same appeal because you have so much more to compete with in New York City. But we did have, you know, there were always like frat parties or dorm parties. There were always bands you could see every weekend if you wanted to. I know I had played quite a few of them. But yeah, basically every weekend there was something or multiple things going on that you could go see bands for sure.
And so the tapes you received were, I assume these were mostly demo tapes, or had some of these bands recorded previously?
I think they were mostly demo tapes. I don't really recall now, but I would assume that most people didn't, you know, back then didn't really have the wherewithal to make more professional recordings. We certainly didn't. I believe we just we probably went into a rehearsal studio and just took a few takes and recorded something, and that was our entry.
And it was here, while talking about rehearsals, that Tom shared an incredible tidbit about the way that bands like his band, Boss Tweed, used one of Columbia's most unique architectural features.
Most of the times, though, we did rehearse on campus. And as you probably know, all the buildings are connected underground by tunnels, right? So we had that was a good place to practice, because you could get loud down there and you wouldn't disturb anybody other than maybe the rats. And
so you used to practice in the Columbia University tunnels?
Oh, yes.
That's incredible.
Yeah. And that was a lot of fun. But it was, what was not fun was lugging everything down there and back up.
With the 11 bands selected and in the recording studio, it was time for Tom to, well, make the record. And for that, he did what he had been doing all along. He looked for students to pitch in.
So the bands went in and everybody did their recording. I did find a local student who was involved in it, who worked at a print shop. So he helped with the typography and, the labels and that kind of thing. I found another student who was an artist who did the cover, did a beautiful job. Another student who did the photography on the back cover. And so we manufactured the album. We made just shy of 1,000 copies.
Now, if you had come across one of those 1,000 copies, perhaps in the campus bookstore, my copy still has a $2.50 Barnes & Noble price tag on it, you'd notice a striking painting on the front cover. That was done, as Tom referenced, by an art student that he found named Oliver Goldstick. If you flip the record over, it has this beautiful, clean design with a photo of Columbia's campus taken westward. I can see my office building there, the Interchurch Center. That was done by a student named Peter Niemi. The typesetting, also student work. There's an appropriately long list of acknowledgments on the back of this record that really give you a sense of just how much of a village effort this became. And one name caught my eye, a thanks to Kellis Parker. Now, I knew of Kellis Parker because he was the first Black professor at Columbia Law School, but he was also a noted jazz trombonist. So I had to ask Tom about how he got involved.
As I recall, I had reached out to him just from a legal standpoint. I just wanted to know, what legal basis do we need to cover? Because I had no experience in any of this.
And yet, Tom and company pulled it off. Here are two more tracks from the record. It's the M1 Alternative with Trapped in My Own Shadow and Quiche with Answer Man.
Thank you.
so basic that no one cares about it. The power of life and death, and no one cares about it. And through this darkest hour we hold our torches higher. Through this darkest hour we keep on calling, crying, we're trapped in our own shadows, we're trapped in.
Trapped in our own shadows, we're 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 trapped in our
Cuts was released in late February 1984. An article in the Columbia Spectator celebrated the release of the album and heralded its, quote, inflation-beating price of $2.50. That article also revealed a little bit more about what was in it for the student musicians. It wasn't fame or fortune. It was the chance to be part of something creative. Bob Stone, rhythm guitarist in the band Token Entry, who I played at the top, told the paper, quote, "We'd all love to become famous and not have to work, but none of us is counting on it." Edward McGuire, who played in two bands on the album, Sled Magnum and Quiche, said, quote, "It was a wonderful opportunity to just go into a studio and do what I wanted." Ann Harris, whose vocals you heard on that Quiche track, Answer Man, which I just played, said she received inquiries from people after the fact who wanted to work with her. Fun fact, Harris was the only Barnard College student featured on the album. The experience of being part of the Cuts compilation was in some ways its own reward. Well, to hear Tom tell it, at least after the release party.
One of the most fun aspects for me was we wanted to kick off the release of the album with a concert. So we got Macintosh Hall, I believe it was called, over at Barnard. And this still amazes me to this day, that we got 9 of the 11 bands to play, but they all played and, you know, got to play several songs in the space of about, I think, maybe 3 hours. So if you think about the logistics of getting 9 bands on and off the stage in about 3 hours, like, nobody does that today, right? So that night was a lot of fun. And, you know, we sold some albums. To be honest, we didn't sell out all, you know, 950. You know, I was very nervous about trying to pull off 9 bands in a night. And I had, you know, talked to all the bands prior, and we kind of agreed on whose equipment we were going to use. So there was a minimum of moving things back and forth during the show. And miraculously, it went off without a hitch. I just remember having a ton of fun playing. For me, the most fun of all of this is always the live performance part. So it was a blast. And I mean, I just have good memories of it. Yeah.
To wrap up our interview, I asked Tom to reflect back on the process of bringing the Cuts compilation into being. This thing that I found in a record store almost 35 years later and had the curiosity and chance to delve into. What did it mean to him?
Well, honestly, I was very proud of it. I loved the whole endeavor. You know, I'm just a big believer in creativity. I mean, everybody should have something that they do that they love to do that. You know, just try to keep a positive attitude, make things happen. You know, don't take no for an answer, right?
Yeah, I love it. And what happened to Boss Tweed and your own music career after 84?
Well, let's see, after all the world tours. Well, we did stay together for a little bit after that. I think we changed our name to The Way. We did a couple gigs at CBGB's, which was fun. So I could say I played at CB's. What else? But we all, you know, we kind of went our separate ways, 85, 86. So that it did kind of peter out. But you know, I've been kind of off and on with music myself over the years, kind of put it aside for about 18 years. And then an old friend had reached out to me back in 2015 and we reconnected. And this was somebody from my original band in high school who he's a professional musician. He's a world-class bassist. And, but ever since then, I've been back on the horse and I'm in several bands now and just trying to, you know, play as much as I can, really. But no fame or fortune or anything like that.
And right there, I think Tom hit upon the thing that's always been so interesting to me about this record since I saw it in Brooklyn's Record Grouch all those years ago. It's this idea of a music scene that's so rich that it could produce a compilation like this, the energy of students that could make it happen, really that sense of possibility that seems to exist uniquely during one's college years and on a college campus. We can only hope as kids around the country return to college campuses that it doesn't remain so exceptional, even if Cuts did not turn into the annual franchise that Tom and his compatriots hoped. There were just two more details to sort out. First of all, what does Cuts stand for?
It was probably my poor attempt at an acronym, Columbia University Tunes and Stuff.
And with that sorted, I had to ask about how Tom's grades had fared. Had this compilation been cover for a massive case of senioritis?
No, I managed to keep that together. I did okay. Yes.
Cool. Well, Tom, thanks so much for talking to us about Cuts, and really cool to share it with the world on this episode of Music in Time.
Well, thank you so much for it's been a thrill for me to kind of relive this. Yes.
What time is it? You keep on asking me this, but all I can tell you is that it's time to kiss. So hold on real tight, don't ask no questions, all right? 'Cause if you do, she'll just say that it's love time tonight. Love time, love time, love time, love time, love time. Don't ask no questions, all right? I said no, 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 love, dance and romance. You know that's all that I ask. 'Cause love time for me is that you're here at last. But if you keep on working like that, you're gone. No questions, all right. I say no, 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 no. Love time, love time, love time, love time, love time. Don't ask no questions, all right.
That was Love Time by Jeremy, one final track off of Cuts, Columbia University Tunes and Stuff, the compilation of student bands put out in 1984. Thanks to the person responsible, Tom Orrett, for joining today and sharing his memories of making this record. It's been such a blast to help spread the word. Maybe next time you're browsing at the record shop, you might find one of those 950 copies and catch a glimpse of that moment in musical time. Or better yet, maybe you know somebody who was at Columbia in the early 80s who might remember this record. Maybe you know somebody who was in one of these bands who went on to do great things musically or otherwise. If so, share the episode. Reach out to me. There's always more to the story. I'm just here to make sure we tell it. This has been Music in Time. I'll see you on the fourth Wednesday of October for our next Sonic Time Travel trip.